Welcome to La Liga Weekly. Congratulations to Real Betis and their supporters, to Joaquin, to Borja Iglesias and Juan Miranda, and to any Brits who stayed up to watch. Well, like an early night compared to the Spanish. Maybe it was too late for Yunus Musa to still be up. Or maybe it was those years in the English youth system that taught him everything about taking penalties under pressure. I mean, fancy missing a penalty. You'd never seen Karim Benzema doing that, at least not three times in a match. If you want to practice, you can maybe sign for Levante, who've now been awarded 12 penalties and are still getting relegated. If you're a new follower of La Liga, you maybe don't know this, but in Spain, penalties are awarded on an entirely random basis. Sometimes a player blocks a shot with his feet and concedes a spot kick. Others might get barged over in the penalty area and not get one. And in those circumstances, the referee might pretend the player was offside and ignore the existence of VAR altogether. Which is not a bad thing. Yes, the latest round of games had left Real Madrid on the brink of La Liga title number 35 by a positively German points margin. And that's because Barca lost again as the plot twists in their story come at the pace of a soap opera. I know you might have missed a couple of podcasts, in which case you probably still think they're great. But no, they're rubbish again now. Keep up. Yeah. We'll preview the Champions League semi-final, so get ready for us talking about Raúl Albiol and Unai Emery as if they're children. Does having a weekend off from La Liga count as antics, Terry? Is that devilish from the Spanish?
The dark arts.
The dark arts of having a weekend arranging. Off. Yeah. Patreon.com/LTEL, and we need you because we need to raise some money. We need find a way of watching Spanish football. We might have a whip round and buy the rights, Terry, if we another couple of subscribers. They like to make it hard for us to watch this Spanish football stuff in England, don't they? It's well hidden.
Do you know that game when you said about staying up late to watch it? It finished at 12:50 a.m. in Spain. It's 10 to 1 in the morning when the final penalty was taken and Miranda clinched the cup for Real Betis. So it was, we thought it was pretty bad. Well, no, I didn't think it was bad. It's what we've become accustomed to. But when I saw it actually Spanish time, I thought it was 10 to 1 in the morning. Mm-hmm. Sure the celebrations went long and into the night.
But we don't know, because they'd had enough of it by then. Premier Sports, haven't they? Press the off button, that'll do. Anyway, so I presume Real Betis lifted the trophy and had good celebrations and everything. We should talk about that, shouldn't we? Daniel Musa is one of our patrons, and he says, give us some, he wants some, hang on, I'll read it out rather than trying to remember what he said. He said, he wants a bit of love for Joaquin. What a bookend this trophy would make, even though a La Liga season without him seems diminished. So it's not just about Joaquin, is it? It is about Betis, who won the Copa del Rey on penalties at the end. Yunus Musa missed his penalty. He was the only one that wasn't. There were good penalties, weren't they, as we're getting used to. And an enjoyable game, Ter. I thought it was thrilling. And I don't want to be biased, and I'm sorry to Valencia fans, but it's good to see Betis lifting some silverware, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think in this particular game, John, I think that the right team won. I think the Betis were the more offensive team throughout the match. They controlled the game early on, got the early goal from Borja Iglesias, were playing really well. And against the run of play, Hugo Duro scored a fine goal. Lovely finish. Great counter-attacking play from Valencia. And from then on, Valencia were what we've become accustomed to under Pau de l'Estay. Are competitive, well-organised, well-coached. But Betis did have the more chances and the more of the game. Mamardashvili in goal for Valencia played really well, so he kept his team competitive right throughout. I had a sneaky feeling, I must admit, that as the game progressed, I could see it going into extra time. I could see it going into penalties. And that was the kind of narrative of the story. It kind of got stuck in a rut where Betis were the team trying to win it more, but they were finding it really difficult to break down Valencia. So it's always tough. I think what we're noticing now in the penalty shootouts, it's certainly the quality of penalties is good. It's not just in the Copa del Rey final, but I think the goalkeepers are finding it harder to deal with the new laws. The laws being applied properly.
Actually applied.
Exactly. And I think therefore we're seeing, just the one miss in this one. There's been other competitions where there's only been the one miss and it's going 10, 11 and stuff like that. So I think we're seeing that applied now. If the penalty's good, then the goalkeeper, what we're seeing there is they probably shouldn't save it. No penalties were saved in this. Musa hit his high and wide. So it is tough on a 19-year-old to miss in those circumstances. But I think the right team won it. And it's great to see for Betis. Big support. It would have been great for Valencia as well, a team that's going through tough times off the pitch, a club that's going through tough times off the pitch. To see Bordalas, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, you know, because it's so unpredictable at Valencia. I don't predict he'll lose his job, but you just never know in with the climate at that club at the moment, whether they see their mid-table position in the league as satisfactory, getting beaten in the Copa del Rey. I don't know. I don't know what's going to be happening moving forward. But I think they're certainly going in the right direction under him. Maybe not in the traditional Valencia style that we know. So that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out with Valencia. But I think, you know, Betis is a massive club, massive fan base. And surprisingly, it's the first time they've won it for 17 years. And Joaquin, yes, who's nearly 41, I don't know if he's going to play on or nothing's been confirmed. I've seen one or two stories, but nothing's been confirmed. And he played a significant part in this. He played a real decent part of the game. He didn't come on for 10 minutes. He came on in the 90 minutes period of play, played the extra time, and was still good. And it's quite extraordinary, really, because I was looking at it and thinking, I actually don't think, from a health perspective, a 41-year-old bloke should still be running around with 18, 19, 20, 21-year-olds. I'm sure it is tongue-in-cheek. But in general speak, I get it why a goalkeeper might play into their 40s, but an outfield player that can still play as well as that, we're going to see it with other players, I'm sure. I don't see any sign of Ronaldo retiring at his age. He's, what, 37, 38? But it is. I mean, you in the cold light day, you think, Joaquin's nearly 41 and he's running around with players half his age. So it's extraordinary for him. We've seen the pictures of them celebrating with his bullfighter's cape out and reminiscent of back in 2005, the story about Juan Miranda being a five-year-old travelling to that final with his dad. You know, Bellerin, who made the goal for Iglesias, fantastic goal. That classic goal, run down the wing, cross, thumping header. And Bellerin, whose father was a Betis supporter, Bellerin on loan from Arsenal, is a Betis supporter. So loads of great little stories around the cup final. And it's pleasing to see how that tournament has progressed over the last, since we've been involved, because there was a period of time where it was a secondary competition. Nobody really took it that serious. And then all of a sudden, it just got better and better and better, which most domestic competitions, people are kind of losing a little bit of interest in. But the Copa del Rey in Spain is growing and growing. And it's a real big, one of my favourite occasions of the year, to be honest. Saturday night, watching the Copa del Rey final. And this game certainly didn't disappoint. So congratulations to Betis and Pellegrini. See, a ridiculous stat that, how old is Pellegrini? 60. I should have checked.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, like Joaquin is too old to be running around with young players. Pellegrini is too old to be wearing a Rob de Kappa tracksuit on the touchline. But I read a story about statistically, they win 63% of their games when he's wearing the tracksuit. Hence the reason he was wearing a tracksuit. I'm younger than Pellegrini. I clearly wouldn't put a tracksuit on if I was back involved in professional football at a club that was going to be on television. It just
68.
Yeah. And he's got the Kappa tracksuit on, and look well. He looks well.
Yeah.
It's a fantastic achievement. That club is really getting some momentum now.
Yeah, and I think it's a good thing that the Copa del Rey is competitive, isn't it? That it's not just Real Madrid, Barcelona winning it.
Yes.
Which is partly a reflection that they're not. Well, certainly Barcelona obviously aren't at their strongest, and Real Madrid, not classically as strong as they were 10 years ago, really, are they?
And I think Real Madrid are the exception, John. I think they're the one team that haven't really joined in, and Atletico haven't had any success in this.
Yeah.
They because of Real Madrid and Atletico have been involved in Champions Leagues in the last decade or so, it's not been their primary focus.
Yeah.
Barcelona have had a spell, though, where they've really gone at it and performed well in this competition. So it's not unusual to see maybe Barcelona and Athletic Club and other clubs like that getting the opportunity to play them in the final. But this time we had two. Real Madrid this year, when the circumstances in which they went out, where Ancelotti left the substitutions, he was leaving them till extra time to bring them on against Athletic Club, and Athletic Club got a winner in the last minute before extra time was played. Those kind of things, it didn't seem like it was the end of the world to Real Madrid when they got knocked out of Copa del Rey. And that's been but in general, most of the teams now really want to have a go at it. You know, we saw Rayo Vallecano get to the semi-final. Look what it completely destroyed their season, didn't it? Rayo having a cup run. Mm. And that's something we've seen in the past in all leagues. You know, if an underdog are doing well in the cup competition, their league form suffers and stuff like that. Rayo was a good example of that. So I think the Copa del Rey is a great competition. I like the way that the previous rounds are done until we get to the semi-final now, and then that's a two-legged affair. They've done consecutive weeks as well, and kind of gets it all done and dusted pretty early. And Betis are deserved winners of it this year.
Oh, let's turn our attention to La Liga, the bread and butter, as it were. Is that? Anyway, ignore that. Yep. So Real Madrid are going to win it, Terry. I mean, this is no surprise to us. We've sort of known this. They won 3-1 away to Osasuna, which is it's a classic Real Madrid result this season, isn't it? You know, a difficult place to go, as we always say about Osasuna. But they came through it, you know, despite Benzema bucking the trend for not managing to score penalties in this particular game. The downside was the injury to Alaba. We will see how bad that is, but it's a comfortable win. They're 15 points ahead now, so they're going to win this league. I mean, we'll see whether they knock off after, you know, the weekend. But they're going to win it by a big margin, aren't they?
Yeah, they only need one point from five games. Yeah. And that's maximum 1 point. They probably have won it already because Barcelona and Sevilla probably will drop points.
Yeah.
So the title is Real Madrid. This is astonishing. It seems ages ago already that it was last weekend I was in Seville doing the Seville-Real Madrid game. And a period in that game when Seville raced ahead 2-0, I was sitting there doing the calculations and thinking, this Real Madrid are in trouble here, because the gap could have gone down to something like 6 points, because you saw Real Madrid losing 2-0 at Sevilla. Barcelona had games against Cadiz at home and Rayo at home, which was their game in hand. And you're thinking that Real Madrid, it looks unlikely they're going to come back in this game because of the way the game was going. Sevilla were on top, Real Madrid before. And then this is a testimony to the courage and spirit, determination and that will to win from Sevilla, that they turned that game around completely and win it. And then the next thing you know, Barcelona are losing at home to Cadiz, losing at home to Rayo Vallecano. And in the space of a week, it's turned around from that first half against Sevilla, where we could have had a title race, to Real Madrid have absolutely destroyed the opposition this season. They have been phenomenal. The three defeats, I looked at them October, one in October, Espanyol, one in January against Getafe, and the Clasico in March. And when you think back to that Clasico, it was quite traumatic for Real Madrid to be thumped in that manner at home by Barcelona. To see how both teams have reacted is, you know, been watching football involved in football for donkey's years now. I would never have predicted that the two teams were going to go in this direction after that match, where Barcelona was superb in that game. Real Madrid were a mess. And then suddenly Real Madrid, they brushed themselves off. They dust themselves down. They put it behind them. They show the character that they've got in terms of all the players are winners. All the players are champions. The manager is a serial winner, and they just brushed it off and moved on and just acted as if that game never existed. And from then on, went another winning streak, winning in the Champions League. And then you got the opposite end of the spectrum, where Barcelona came off of that win. And we're all thinking, Barcelona are back. Got Aubameyang now. He's going to be the Pichichi next year and the Ballon d'Or winner. They've got this player, they've got that player. And then their form deteriorated straight away. They struggled to 1-0 win against Sevilla with Pedri. scored a spectacular goal. But that's a tough game. And then they struggled to win at Levante when Luke Dion was needed. And then they lose to Cadiz, they lose to Rio, they lose to Eintracht Frankfurt. And now again, you're looking at it and thinking the difference is out of that game, Barcelona and Real Madrid. It was a real freaky result now when you think about it. Mm. In the way that it was achieved, the way that both teams played, and then the way that both teams have responded since. So for Real Madrid, a phenomenal season in terms of consistency. They've taken advantage of the fact that Atletico and Barcelona have been nowhere near their best. But they just keep doing what they do. And this game, so they've got Sevilla and Osasuna. So that was it. I was thinking this could be a 6-point gap, and they got Osasuna away on Wednesday. What they do? They come back from 2-0 down and they win comfortably at Osasuna. I mean, when I say comfortably, it wasn't a comfortable game, but they dominated the second half. They were miles better than Osasuna. And Osasuna are a really good team, really difficult to play against, particularly in that stadium. I know they've lost games this year, but with their confidence up, that's a difficult game for Real Madrid, and they made light work of it. There's some changes made, some players rested. So that was a brilliant performance, brilliant result, and they've had a brilliant season. And who knows how it's going to end now. We know they're going to win the Liga. This kind of helps them, you know, in terms of their preparation for the Champions League. The dark arts of having a week off will certainly help them. And they know now that, you know, between the two games against Man City, that the league is going to be wrapped up. Whether it's against Espanyol, I presume it will be. They just need to avoid defeat at home to Espanyol to win it. So it's all going to be done and dusted. Whereas on the opposite side, Man City are going at it. Hammer and tongs with Liverpool to win the Premier League, playing big games against Atletico Madrid, playing big games against Liverpool. Relatively straightforward win against Watford at the weekend, but then straight back into Champions League action, then straight back into the dogfight in terms of winning the title. So it's Real Madrid in an excellent position now.
I'm never sure whether, I'm not sure which way it works though. I'm not sure that it's that having the rest time is a massive factor. I mean, I get that it sort of can be. The logic tells you it is. I'm not sure the results show that though. I'm not sure they show, you know, because otherwise the teams that have the long international, you know, the break, they should come back and win everything, shouldn't they? But it doesn't work, does it? That's not how it is.
I think there's a delicate, a fine line between too long a break. A week is perfect because the big teams in Europe, big teams at the top end of the division, they don't get the luxury of 6-7 days off without a game. It does take 2 or 3 days to recover from any game, let alone when you're going like Manchester City in battle with Atletico Madrid and Liverpool in 4 straight games. And then coming off the back of that and going straight. It's where teams want to be. It's why they're big squads. It's why Pep wants to be manager of Man City and Ancelotti wants to be manager of Real Madrid. And they want to be involved in the thick end of the action at the end of the season, just managing your players, right? So Pep rested a few at the weekend, which is wise. But I think it's just that wear and tear of, you know, it does take time to recover from a game. That used to take me 2 or 3 days. And then if you were playing a midweek game, I would say probably the first 10, 15 minutes, you need to get the last game out of the system. You know, muscle soreness and stiffness and stuff like that until you get back up to speed. So I think a week is the perfect break. 2 weeks drags on international breaks and stuff like that. If you've had, you know, if you're knocked out of a domestic cup and you haven't had a game that week and you've got a 2-week break between games, I think that can be an issue in terms of getting back up to match speed and getting back to match sharp. But I think this week, for Villarreal and Real Madrid, it does give them an advantage, I think. Now, whether that's going to be enough to win the two ties, I don't know. But I think it does give both teams an advantage. Plus, they've got the second legs at home, both of them. So they're both in good shape as well.
Let's move on to Barcelona, shall we? I just want to read out Philip's message. Is one of our Patreons, patreon.com/LTEL, if you want to join in. He's a Barcelona fan, is Philip, and he says, I thought we were past these performances. It's like we're back to where we left with Koeman. It's all reacting, not taking control. We don't press, we don't push, we don't make runs. All we do is cross. Side note, funny how Pedri changes all of that. And it's got a point, I think, about the crossing. The fans, so they've lost 2 games, home, back. So this is where we're slightly falling over ourselves, because they've also won away, haven't they, to Real Sociedad in midweek. And then this, I don't know where this game came from. I'm confused. I guess it was it dropped out of somewhere, yeah, didn't it?
From week 21.
Yeah.
I don't know how.
Yeah, so that was that. Anyway, that's probably the, yeah, when they're away, isn't it? And the, but anyway, so they've lost another home game. So they've lost Frankfurt, Cadiz, Rayo Vallecano at home. So the win away to Real Sociedad, yeah, we'll take that into account. The fans are shouting for Luke de Jong to come on and, yeah, to start whipping the ball into the box. I know it's worked a couple of times. I know his goals, you know, have been worth a lot of points to them. I'm not sure it works because, you know, Rayo defended it well. Goalkeeper was positive. I know he got one wrong. He had to be cleared off the line. It's not the long-term solution, is it, for Barcelona to be slinging balls into the box? So
And Araujo. Araujo goes up front as well.
Yeah, yeah. So why do it? Why not just play the way that you're going to play in the long term?
Yeah, I take that point. But I think also we have to remember the actual quality of the crossing is absolutely diabolical.
Yeah, because
it couldn't be
slinging it in. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just chucking it in, and it makes it easy for defenders to clear. It makes it easy for the goalkeeper to come out and get. Honestly, the crossing is appalling. Lazy crossing. They're not in good positions to cross. Just hoofing the ball in the goal, and it's not great to watch.
I'm looking at the
context of this run of form, the decisions that have to be made at that football club are getting bigger and bigger each passing game, because it's not just two defeats at home, or three. We're talking about a team that were ninth in the Bundesliga and totally outplaying them. Cadiz deserved to beat them 1-0. And we're talking about a team in Rio who've got one of the worst records in the league this season away from home and still found it quite easy to score against Barcelona. So they're losing to Rio and Cadiz at home. It's not just, they're not losing to Atletico Madrid and Sevilla and Betis and someone like that. These are two teams, you know, that have been struggling, and Barcelona made no headway. So I think the decision making now, on the back of that win in the Clásico, where he probably looked at it and thought, oh, I only need this and I only need that. I'm looking at it now and I'm thinking, who do you keep? And Pedri, Philip's point about Pedri is perfect example, because Koeman was getting booed out of the place when he was playing Luke de Jong and Araujo up front against Granada this season. And it was a matter of time before he got the sack, and he did. But Xavi's having to do the same. And it's, you know, I'm looking at it now and thinking, well, I didn't think they needed that position. I thought they would keep him. I'm not so sure I would now. And I'm looking at the squad, and it was interesting to hear feedback from people. Who would you keep? Who would you let go? Barcelona. It was baffling last night that PK and Dani Alves were on the bench but not used, and the substitutions were made where it was obvious to bring Dani Alves on if you're taking Dest off instead of putting Araujo at right back. There are senior players in the squad that are not the biggest names, Jordi Alba and Sergio Busquets, in terms of they've always been surrounded by other star players. Their form has deteriorated. I'm looking at him and I can understand why Frankie de Jong gets the ump. He's playing poorly. He's clearly not playing well. But I can understand why he gets the ump when he looks around and Busquets is still kept on. Whereas I'm looking at him thinking, well, put de Jong at holding midfield, because Busquets is giving the ball away too much and he's not been able to get about the pitch. And wonderful player that he has been, astonishing footballer. But I do look at it and think, and Jordi Alba, likewise, he was responsible for just slinging aimless crosses into the box, getting blocked by the first man. Any set piece he took got cleared by the first defender. His passing was sloppy in the opening minutes of the game. It led to a general sloppy performance, but there's no replacement for Jordi Alba. So where do you start at Barcelona? Who are the guaranteed ones that you keep? Ter Stegen in goal. Yes, I don't think they're going to get better. So keep Ter Stegen in goal. Clearly, Dest isn't the answer at right back. Is 38-year-old Dani Alves the answer? Clearly not, but I'm still playing ahead of Dest at this moment in time.
Well, you need a right back, don't you, there? Yeah.
PK and Araujo are the best two centre-backs, but I...
How many games is PK going to play? Yeah.
And Longley is a decent cover. I don't think Xavi particularly fancies him, so he's got to be moved on. I look at Eric Garcia. I don't think he's going to win the Champions League or La Liga with Eric Garcia playing 30, 40 games a year. Umtiti, I don't know. They've been trying to move him on for a long time. Then you look at the midfield players. You've got Pedri, Gavi, definitely you keep. That's without question. Nico, definitely you keep. You've got Sergio Roberto that hasn't played for a long time. He's going to have to be one. Ricky Puig. Someone mentioned Ricky Puig. Why doesn't he get a game? I don't know. You know, because when it's time to make those changes, it appears Xavi is preferring to go with Araujo and Luke De Jong up front, and Puig probably doesn't fit into that style of play when it's 20 minutes to go and you're chasing an equaliser or still trying to get a win. So that's why Ricky Puig. If Ricky Puig isn't going to play, move him on. And then you look at the do you keep Adama Traore? He was quite lively when he came on. Dembele is always lively, doesn't produce, doesn't score a goal, and at the moment he's delivery into the box.
His final form ball,
is letting him down.
It's gone right back down, hasn't it? Because he was sensational when Xavi first put faith in him, and when Barca were playing well. Now he's used to the ball. It's awful at the moment, isn't it?
And then you got Brathwaite, that we don't see anymore. Do you pin your hopes on Aubameyang, who's disappeared since the Clásico? I mean, he scored the winner against Real Sociedad, but in general terms, he's disappeared. His players is not very good at the moment. He's ineffective in games. So all those pieces that were in place when they won 4-0 against Real Madrid, you're thinking, well, he only needs this and he only needs that. Now I'm looking at it again and thinking, this is pretty much the same as what we were seeing under Koeman. And it needs a lot more work done on it. Philippe Coutinho, will he be back? Trincao
will be back. Wolves aren't buying him for 20 million or whatever, are they? So,
and Coutinho, I don't know. You say no, I don't think Barcelona would want him back, but he's got a contract still. Someone's still got to pay the money that Barcelona want.
But Villa have got a lot of money. Villa have got a lot of money, haven't they? I think so. I think they will buy, and he's been a success, I think. That's the one I'm reassuring Barca fans on that one, Terry. The rest of it, I can't.
Yeah. So.
Before we leave Barcelona, can we talk about the penalty? Because it would have been... Why did Gavi not get a penalty for that? So he gets barged in the back.
I don't know. It was, clear foul.
Yeah, obvious foul. So he doesn't give it. Play goes on. And then you think, right, they're going to review it. And no, offside. The flag wasn't up. How long does it normally take for them to figure out a tight offside in La Liga on the VAR?
Yeah.
Minutes, isn't it?
No, I agree. And we saw the dark arts from Rio. Fantastic. But in fairness, another thing we had, was it 11 minutes added on plus another two? That's great. Not just in that game last night, but so when these teams are time wasting, which Rio were, Issy Palazon got a kick in the head, didn't he? From the, I don't know why Luke Young does those spectacular overhead kicks. He head it, mate. and he sort of right clumping the air. So he definitely was injured. There was blood. They brought him back on. So he went down for treatment. They brought him back on to make a sub. So it was killing. They were trying. Yeah. They'd already held the number up with his number on it to come off. But they rushed him. They put him back on. The confusion was all over the place. And then literally seconds later, in the next break of play, they substituted him. So if teams are going to do these time-wasting antics, which Rayo did, and I understand why they do it, they're Rayo Vallecano, they're fighting for their lives, they're very close to salvation, and they managed to get themselves a lead at Barcelona. The goal was an absolute joke defensively as well from Barcelona. Mm. There's literally no defence about anywhere, and they're only playing against one attacker, and they still score. So if you're hanging on for dear life at the Camp Nou for an historic win, you're going to do everything you can in to try and run the clock down and stuff like that. But the good thing is now, and it's only in La Liga, we're seeing that punished. No one gets uptight anymore because you're pretty guaranteed that if the referee has seen it and the crowd have their parts of playing it by, you know, bringing it to the referee's attention, the manager will complain to the fourth official. And we're not just seeing 3 or 4 minutes added on. We're seeing teams punished now as if to say, well, you can waste as much time as you like. I'm going to add it on. And if you keep wasting it, I'm going to add more on. So, you know, the days of getting to the 90th minute and waiting for the referee to blow the whistle in La Liga, long gone. I mean, that was a half of extra time played in that game last night. Yeah. It was almost like 15 minutes extra time. And Barcelona still couldn't create a chance, still couldn't score a goal. And it does leave you wondering, you know, the extent of the job that Barcelona have to do in the summer. When they win the Clásico, there's one or two rumours about Messi returning because he's not happy at PSG. And I'm thinking, no, I think they've ripped the plaster off. There's no need. Now I'm saying get him back because you're seeing what the alternatives are. And it at the moment, it doesn't look very good at all.
Yeah. Well, you know what? We need to... Maybe for Patreons, we'll do a Barcelona special where we'll try and figure this out in the summer. there's not a lot of competitive football to come. Maybe soon we'll do that. And you try and piece that complicated jigsaw together. Like I've said this before, haven't I? Where someone like Mallorca, Alaves, Elche, every season, every summer, they've got a complicated picture because they don't get the first pick. So they've got to wait, see who's going, and then, you know, and then time's running out and you've got this financial restriction now on this hand. And it's a big jeopardy every summer. And we don't normally see a giant club. We don't normally pay that much attention. We just say, oh, look, they've got a different team this year. Well, they've got half a dozen different players.
Yeah.
It's rare for it to happen to a super club, but it's obviously coming for Barcelona. And, you know, where we thought they were a few weeks ago is definitely not where they're at now. So we crack on and do Sevilla. Now, Sevilla, not quite where they're at, Terry, because they never create a chance. The XG, expected goals, they're mid-table. It's frankly boring.
And, you say Sevilla, we're talking about Atletico.
Sevilla. Yeah, we'll get to. It's a problem in Spanish football, that, isn't it? But no, not anymore. Sevilla now 3-2 away win against Levante. Is that the Levante factor? Because all Levante games are hugely entertaining. It's a shame we're going to lose them. Or is there something different about how Sevilla are playing, or is it just a couple of games and they'll be back to normal?
I think there's something different. I don't think there's anything major different. I think the better players are back from injury. I think that's helped them. Their strength has always been this season and last season in being really rock solid at the back. And, you know, hard working in midfield. They have a team structure that makes it hard to play against them. And they've never been expansive under Lopetegui. I don't think that has changed at all. I just think better players are back from injury. I think the injuries they had really derailed their season. I still think they would have done better in the Europa League if they hadn't have had eight players missing against West Ham, in which they didn't even have a bench. They were putting on young players to do the job. So I think the likes of the Mela and Tecatito and people like the Papu Gomez are back from injury. Koundé and Carlos are playing pretty much every game, so it makes them stronger defensively. We have people like Rekic playing, Gudele playing at centre-back. So I think it's just a question of that their season was derailed by the enormous amount of injuries. They've got a strong squad. They possibly should have coped a bit better. But there's nothing like having your best players available. And I think that what we saw the weekend... Interesting, I didn't realise the first two goals for Tecatito and the first goal this season for Jules Koundé, who normally supplies a decent amount from... His goals from attacking set pieces, a stunning header as well, by the way, which tells you why he probably should be scoring more goals. They've suffered with the fact they haven't got a £50 million striker. Like the other teams, they're challenging at the top and challenging in the Champions League. And, you know, they're having to make do with Rafa Mir and Nesri. So I think they should have gone closer to Real Madrid. I think they were the one team this year that were in position. But as I said, I think that the massive run of injuries really didn't help them.
So if you're old mate Monchi, if you're giving him advice, are you with Sevilla, are you holding out on Koundé and Diego Carlos, given that you'll get offers for those two centre-backs? Are you spending a fortune on a centre-forward? Is that feasible? Are you going to get one of the ones who are good enough or not?
No.
So you carry on. You just try to find the best cheap one you can.
Better than I. Rafa Mir, I think, has done all right this season. We look at his goals to game ratio, the games he started, the amount of goals he scored. I think he's a player that needs to be worked on, needs to be polished up in terms of his techniques and his goal scoring instincts and stuff like that. But I think there's a possibility there of him improving. And Nesri has been, you know, one or two clubs around Europe have been interested in, but Sevilla paid 20 million for him. Are they going to make a profit if they decide to sell him? Are they going to keep the two of them? Would you keep Koundé and Carlos? I don't think they will this season. But I wouldn't be, and I'm sure Sevilla supporters are not panicking because they're going to get massive amounts of money, which will be reinvested. And I'm sure Montier's replacement's already mounted. I'd never heard of Koundé and Carlos before he came to Sevilla. I think Carlos was the one that was kicked by a referee. That was my only recollection when he was playing in France. That was my only recollection. And I'm sure that Munchie will have replacements lined up. But I think, in all honesty, I think both of those players will be not moved on, will want to move on this summer. And that's how Sevilla work. So I'm guessing 70, 80 million, 90 million for the two of them. Then, you know, it's something that Sevilla haven't had. I can remember back in the day when they sold Julio Baptista for 20 million. That was a windfall. And when they spent half of it on Luis Fabiano and Freddie Canuti, and they were a better team. So there's going to be a windfall financially for Sevilla. My one issue with it all, and this goes against what a lot of other people believe, I think they got the wrong manager for Sevilla. I'm not saying he's a bad manager. I think it's a different choice for Sevilla. In terms of, do they want to be Atletico Madrid, a clone of Simeone's team, which is what they become? Or do they go back to the, you know, Sevilla style that we've seen in the past, where they were more expansive, where they scored more goals, where they were more fun to watch? We've kind of accepted over the last two or three years now that this is the Lopetegui Sevilla. I'm not a fan. I prefer the up and at them.
Yeah,
attack-minded, severe approach. So, but I think Munchie and Lopetegui's relationship is rock solid. They believe in what they're trying to do. But I think there'll be changes at Seville again this summer.
Let's do Villarreal next, so shall we? They won 2-0 against Valencia in midweek. Danjuma got the goals, a penalty, and a nicely worked goal as well. How do they approach the Liverpool, and how did they? Oh, it seems a bit old talking about Valencia, doesn't it? Because obviously they played the Copa del Rey final since
Valencia rested a lot of players for that game, so it's a game that Villarreal should win. A lot depends on Gerard Moreno if he's fit and available. But Danjuma has been an outstanding success this season. How do they approach the Liverpool game? Like they've been approaching games in Europe against bigger teams for the last 2 years. You know, going to Arsenal, getting a draw, you know, beating Manchester United on penalties, beating Juventus, beating Bayern Munich. They're going to do exactly the same. They're going to go, they really believe in what they do now. So when they go away from home, they're really hard to beat. So that's the first leg at Anfield. And they're going to be, they've got their plan. It does involve getting lots of players back behind the ball. It does involve lots of experienced players knowing exactly the jobs they're asked to do. And it involves a lot of players now that believe in what Unai Emery is telling them to do. And they will have confidence in the fact that they're going to try and play on the counter-attack, of course, but they'll limit that. They won't be pushing too many players forward from attack. So, you know, we normally see the full-backs get forward for Villarreal. That won't happen in this game. There's going to be a back four. There'll be probably a bank of five. Even if Moreno plays, he drops in. And they're going to be looked to try and play a little bit of counter-attacking football with the pace and quality that they have. Danjuma's been sensational. Been fantastic this year. And a player, I must admit, I didn't know too much about at Bournemouth. I was surprised when Villarreal spent so much money on him. But it certainly paid off. So where they are in the Champions League semi-final is astonishing.
Yeah.
Because I've mentioned in previous podcasts, he's their record signing. Just over 20 million. So it's possible for Sevilla to find a striker that gets those goals for around that price. It's just so far they haven't been able to find the two. Villarreal have paid that and got a stunning footballer. His second goal of the weekend, midweek against Valencia was excellent. So that's what you're going to get from Villarreal. They're going to be tough, hard to break down. Liverpool are going to have to be patient. Liverpool might get frustrated. And at times, Villarreal will hit them on the break. And they keep the ball as well. So when they are set deep, you know, they have the ability to play out under pressure into midfield and then get the quicker attacking players involved in the game, and they will hope to take advantage of that. So, no, I think that Liverpool are huge favourites, but I certainly don't write off VRL.
So let's
in the semi-finals.
Let's bring you up to date with the relegation battle then. Everything else that happened in midweek is in part of the relegation battle, including Atletico Madrid, yes. Terry. There's nothing more interesting to say than they drew 0-0 in Aitor Pranca's first game in charge. But they kept a clean sheet, so, you know, Oblak didn't check any in, which is good. So the other results are Getafe won 2-0 away to Celta Vigo. Rayo have won two games away in Barcelona. If the whole tournament was played in Barcelona, yes, they'd be the champions because they won 1-0 away to Espanyol. Cadiz
done the double over Barcelona.
Yeah.
Beat them twice this year.
Cadiz lost 3-2 at home to Athletic with a late comeback. Yeah, I mean, some weird decisions along the way for the penalties, but we won't dwell on that. Betis, of course, before the cup final, lost 1-0 at home to Elche, and a massive win for Mallorca 2-1 against Alaves. Yep. So for the patrons, let me put the table up as we have a chat. Where are we?
I think Elche is safe now.
Yeah.
I think a 38-point haul is enough. Mm. I think a point a game, the other teams are not going to get that. So I think that's the target. We say 40 points, but I think a point per game, there's always three or four teams that don't reach that amount. So therefore, I think that the Elche win takes them clear. I think it's from there down. It will be Getafe have still got some work to do. The two brilliant goals from Borja Mayoral in that game away at Celta, mid-table, Celta Vigo. So I think Getafe are nearly there. He's an interesting player, Mayoral, on loan from Roma, and a good player. It's Levante, of course, and Real Madrid. Two really good goals. And found it hard to get the playing time back at Getafe alone, but these were two really good finishes. So I think they're Elche is safe, Getafe are nearly there, and then it's a battle between Mallorca, 32, Cadiz, 31, Granada, 30, Levante and Alaves. Time's running out, I'm afraid. Which is going to be a real shame because Morales is still good fun to watch. Levante have been good to watch in recent weeks. And they were unlucky in this game in the recent defeat against Sevilla. Morales scoring a penalty, missing a penalty. I think it was their 10th penalty of the year this year.
12.
Did you say 12? 12.
Yeah.
I knew he's taken 10. Yeah. So it's Levante going to be, I think Levante and Alaves, I'm not writing them off because Levante have shown some form lately, but I just think games are running out now. So it's Granada, Cadiz, Mallorca, I think.
Three for one place.
The ones.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the points tally is looking healthy-ish, isn't it, for the relegation, given that they've got five games to play. I haven't memorised the games yet. But let's get the games up as well, shall we? Have a look at those as we go, because they are... So there we are. So Cadiz... So it starts again Friday night, doesn't it? Cadiz away to Sevilla, Alaves home to Villarreal. Maybe not a bad time to play Villarreal. Valencia derby, of course. Valencia versus Levante, Elche, Osasuna, Granada, Celta Vigo. It's an opportunity, that, isn't it? Rio, you say, should be all right. Mallorca are away to Barcelona, so they should win that 1-0 comfortably.
Yep.
sorry, Barca fans. I didn't dwell on that, should I? It's fascinating. It's up for grabs, as we say, isn't it, that one?
Yeah. Oh, there's still plenty to play for. Real Madrid won the league. Relegation is going to go right down to the very end. The Champions League positions as well is going to go down to the wire, and who knows how Betis is going to react after winning, because they've now got the Europa League place sewn up. They can really go for it in a celebratory mood, try and attack the teams above them. 4-point gap between them and Atletico. So it's not out of the question that Betis can get top four. What season that would be, top four and Copa del Rey winners. So Atletico, they've got to liven up. I mean, it's as simple as that. So at Barcelona, it's... Real Sociedad, I don't see that we saw them lose at home to Barcelona 1-0. So it was 1-0. but they lost at home. I can't believe Real Sociedad have only scored 12 goals.
12 goals. 17 it's extraordinary, isn't it? It's amazing that they've got as many points as they have, considering how.
I know.
Got 32 points at home out of 12 goals somehow. They've spent those 12 goals very well, haven't they? I had a look on that on the FB ref there, that stats site. Expected goals, 24 in home games. They've scored 12 of them. So they're not creating many chances. 24 is low for expected goals, but to only but they're also missing chances. That's an extraordinary rate of wasting chances.
Yeah, Isak had chances again and keeps missing them.
Yeah.
So I really can't put my finger on it. It's not like they're a dull team to watch. Mm. They're just players. Porto hasn't scored this season. Isak's got 5.
Yeah,
Sorloth has come in and done some good work, but doesn't. He's not prolific.
He's fitted straight in, and he looks quite good and never scores.
So it's you're kind of looking at people like Aritz Elistundo and Lionel Men, the two centre backs, getting some of these goals, penalties. Oyarzabal is a big miss. So, but incredibly, Real Sociedad, they're 6 points behind Atletico, but they'll be fighting for the Europa League spot. We've got the Europa Conference position as well, so plenty to play for at the top end, apart from Real Madrid winning the league, plenty to play for in the relegation battle. And then we do have some teams that are going to be good opponents, I think, in terms of mid-table rankings. I think at the weekend, Celta losing at home to Hetafe might have had that air the weekend, midweek game, an air of a mid-table team with not a lot of motivation. Yeah. There will be one or two of those. Osasuna are in that category in the mid-table. And one or two others. So it's Elche might take their foot off the gas now. They're safe. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, but there are still, you know, plenty to play for in the remaining 5 games of the season.
We'll be back, everybody, Patreons. We'll be back for you first, of course. Actually, there's no reason to wait till Friday anymore. So we'll whisper that one, Terry. We can do something back end of the week for Patreons. After the semi-finals of the Champions League for everybody else. We'll be back next week. Terry, you're off to Spain this week, aren't you? You're one of the few Brits who would actually get to see Real Madrid win the league this weekend, because we're not allowed to watch it here, are we? So.
Yeah, I was really pleased being invited out again next weekend, travel Friday, and I do work Saturday, Sunday and Monday. So you're doing the Monday night the game stuff as well. And I thought Real Madrid win the league this week. Be good to be there. It's 4:15 kickoff in Spain, 3:15 here. So it won't be shown on UK television. So that's a pity. But I'm pretty sure Real Madrid are going to avoid defeat against Espanyol, who are incidentally one of those teams that's beaten Real Madrid this year, but I can't see it happening again.
We'll see. Right. Enjoy your Spanish football. Have a great trip, Terry. Patrons, we'll see you later in the week. Patreon.com/LTEL if you want to join in. And thank you to everybody for watching. We'll see you again soon.